Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thanks, everyone, for coming. I'm going to talk to you today about our healthcare investment trust. We've titled the presentation Unloved and Undervalued. Healthcare is really out of favour. The reason for that is nervousness around the US election next year. I'll walk you through what's really going on with the sector, and I think it's a really attractive valuation opportunity for investment in the sector. So I'm just going to start with a few examples of why investors invest in the sector and the opportunities that have arisen historically and the great returns that some of these stocks have delivered. So hopefully you can get a real flavour of why people invest in healthcare. And then I'll walk you through what's going on valuation and why I think it's a really attractive opportunity to become involved. So there's actually a phenomenal amount of innovation going on in the sector. I've been investing in healthcare for over 20 years now. And the innovation that's going on currently is the most impressive I've ever seen. A lot of the focus is oncology. Cancer. We've had major developments in an area called immuno-oncology. And what this covers is scientists really struggle to understand if patients were unfortunately diagnosed with cancer and had tumors growing inside them, why didn't our immune systems attack those tumors like they would with some kind of infection? And what's been found is that when a patient has a tumor growing inside them, that tumor expresses molecules that actually hide the tumor from the immune system. So what scientists have been able to figure out is how to block that and open the tumors to the immune system. So we're starting to see some remarkable new therapies come to market. AstraZeneca has been involved in this field. Merck, based in the US, incredibly successful. They have a PD-1 inhibitor, which is a crucial drug in this space. It's currently selling around $12 billion a year and has a lot of room for growth. So AstraZeneca, it's been a great stock. We think there's a lot of potential upside. The other big area outside of immuno-oncology is targeted therapies. Again, this is focused on cancer, but there's broader opportunities here. And this has really come from many years of work understanding genetics and molecular biology. And so now, again, if a patient's unfortunately diagnosed with cancer, what scientists will do is take a sample or biopsy, and they'll run high-throughput sequencing on that tumor and try and understand what drives the growth of that tumor. It's called a driver mutation. And now we have the science and understanding is to develop specific drugs that target that mutation. And AstraZeneca has a drug, Tagrisso, which is focused on a certain type of lung cancer. And what the future holds is that previously, if you were diagnosed with cancer, generally the prognosis wasn't great. With these kind of drugs, patients can live for many years with their cancer under control. So it's a completely different future for patients who are diagnosed with cancer today. Loxo Oncology is a stock we held in the fund previously. There are biotech companies, just here give an example of a smaller company and not pharma companies. And again, they were focused on targeted therapy, a different type of cancer, but again, very much this targeted approach. And they had patients going on for 2 to 3 years with types of cancer where normally your prognosis would have been 6 months. So it's really exciting area in terms of what's going on in oncology. And this is an example. So Eli Lilly, big US pharmaceutical company, came in and acquired Loxo at a significant premium. And the return from IPO was over nearly 2,000%. So really exciting from both the drug development side, the patient side, and also for investors. Robots, there's a lot of excitement broadly about the use of robots. Healthcare is a big area. This top slide shows the device is called that's developed by Intuitive Surgical. It's the Da Vinci robot. It's used in general surgery. I've actually had a go on it, but not on a patient, just with plasticine. So you stick your head in here and you move the arms around, and I add, as I said, plasticine. The great advantage of this and the big theme here is minimally invasive surgery. So historically, we used to have open surgery, Recovery time was lengthy, risk of infection. Here it's minimally invasive surgery. The patients can go home a lot quicker. So that's general surgery. Here we have the Mako robot. This is sold by a company called Stryker. This is for hips and knees, so more precise fitting of hips and knees. And this other one is focused on the spine. So currently 2% of procedures use robots in healthcare. Obviously a huge opportunity for growth. And Stryker with the Mako robot, again, it's been a great stock. So just to give you a flavor of why people invest in healthcare, let's talk about what we face today as investors in healthcare. So this is a long-term chart of healthcare, the healthcare sector performance. So going back to the early 90s. So top chart is relative healthcare performance versus the market. It's been a good place to invest. The bottom chart shows the valuation. The valuation is right near historical lows. The reason for this is when we have US elections coming up, and healthcare is a real big focus, and at the moment it's focused on drug pricing, the sector really underperforms for a period, but offers an opportunity to invest again. So you have periods of significant outperformance, and then you have these pullbacks. And the previous times where we've come to this kind of valuation level, where we're at a 30% discount to the long-term average on valuation, is 92 to 94, and that was around fears over the Clintons on US healthcare, then 2008, 2009 with Obamacare, and again, the sector has come down to a big discount. Now, I think there are catalysts that are going to come up that are going to drive performance from healthcare from here. A really good market timing indicator that we use is focused on ETF flows. So ETFs are commonly used for investing now. They're a great contrarian indicator. When flows are really high, that's when you want to sell. When flows are really low, you buy. So they're a phenomenal contrarian indicator. Healthcare out of favor, matching with valuation. And if you look at biotech, which is obviously part of healthcare, it's even worse. Nobody likes biotech stocks. I think they're very attractive. So that sentiment, him and his fellow politicians are causing the problems. I'll give you a bit more color, but just from technicals, again, absolute performance of healthcare over 30 years. This is the relative performance of healthcare. And you can see over every time we have fears over a US election, it offers an opportunity to buy for the sector. And I think that's right. So the catalyst for me is the problem in the US, the healthcare system is completely messed up, particularly on the drug pricing side. You have a system that has a supply chain and takes a huge amount of profit. So the pharmaceutical companies get a price, which is called the net price. The general trend on that price is negative, but through volume growth, the companies are growing. The list price is what the supply chain essentially makes their profits out of. And I won't go into any more detail, but just so you know, the list price has been moving up aggressively over a series of years, and that's where all this controversy is around pharmaceutical pricing. But it's the supply chain that's driven this, and unfortunately, consumers pay a part of that drug bill in the US based on the list price. So all they've seen is their bills go up and up and up. So there's a big furore around drug pricing in the US. I actually think politicians in the US, by the end of February, are actually going to come up with a bill that will be agreed by the House and Senate in the US, signed off by President Trump, and that will be a major relief for the sector. So that could drive a significant period of performance. If this happens, pharma and biotech stocks will rally significantly and offer decent returns. And that's a major catalyst for me, which is kind of under the radar because people are just very bearish about this situation in the US. Typically, the kind of consensus view is nothing happens in politics as we come up to an election. If you actually look at the data, politicians are much more active right until February before a November presidential election. The reason is they want to go to the constituents and say, hey, look what we've done for you. This is a massive focus area. If they actually achieve something which would reduce the amount that the consumer pays for pharmaceuticals, that will be a big positive. So for consumers, it would be better. The pharmaceutical and biotech companies would have to pay part of that, but relative to where expectations are, it will be a big lift for the sector. And more broadly, that would take healthcare policy away from being the number one sort of politician focus, and it would move to other things. Now, the presidential election is obviously controversial in the US as well because of fears over Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. There's predictions that if Elizabeth Warren's elected, the US market's down 25% the next day, which is pretty scary. My belief is it's not going to happen. It's very complicated, but I really feel that's either going to be a moderate Democrat chosen as a candidate who would likely beat Trump, or Trump's going to be in power again. If either of those things happen, healthcare as a sector is going to perform very strongly because we will be faced with the current environment. And not the fears over sort of the very left-wing politicians of Warren or Sanders who would be very negative healthcare, but also very negative for other sectors. So if you look at Warren and her proposals, 80% of the S&P would be affected. So there's a lot of risk here, but it's also an opportunity to lift the overhang on the sector. I just want to talk longer term about how we approach the sector. And we look at things slightly differently. So historically, when investors said, invest in healthcare, if you run a healthcare fund, invest in my fund, everyone's getting older and there's going to be lots of people who require products. The problem with that is it's so expensive. Our view is the delivery of healthcare is very, very inefficient and it needs to change to make it more cost effective. In this country, obviously the NHS, seems to run for a period, then we need more cash. We run for a period, we need more cash, but we don't become more productive. And that's the issue, and it won't change unless we do focus on this. The only way to solve that is through the use of innovation and technology. And the way I justify that is looking at this chart. So this looks at the projection of costs of treating Alzheimer's patients in the US out to 2050. So it's estimated by 2050, the cost of looking after patients will be nearly $1.1 trillion a year. If you could develop an Alzheimer's drug that would delay the onset by 5 years, you could reduce that cost by nearly $450 billion. So that's what innovation delivers, and that's where we focus our investment. So I'm going to use an example, and you can think of this in the broadest sense, diabetes. So diabetes is very common in the Western world and emerging markets as a growing problem. Patients, pre-diabetic, and then over time their disease develops. This is disease severity. So if a patient's treated well, their disease is managed, they take their medicine, they use medical devices to manage their blood glucose, and they avoid going into hospital, the actual disease severity will increase in time, but that's natural with age. So it can be well managed. If, however, a patient isn't managed well with diabetes, this is what happens. You get all sorts of serious issues, and they can get worse and worse. They're incredibly expensive to treat. And in the worst case, you're looking at amputations, and there's tens of thousands of amputations a year in the UK alone from diabetes. So what we want to find are products and services that bring this disease severity, and this is in line with obviously the cost of a patient going parabolic, bring it back down to this line. And so that's where our focus is. So to give you an example of new products, there's a big category of pharmaceutical product called that are called GLP-1s. They're very effective. They control blood glucose, but they also help lower patients' weight. It's a big growth area. Novo Nordisk is a company is very exposed here. On the device side, historically, I'm sure many of you have seen this for patients with diabetes. At different points during the day, they would test their blood glucose, prick the skin, and then they take the blood onto a sample paper and put it into a reader. The problem with that is, if you're a diabetic, you need to keep your glucose in a narrow range. The problems arise if you go up above the range or below. Below is where you can end up in a coma, you're taken to hospital, and that's where the cost. The big cost of diseases like diabetes, asthma, is when patients end up in hospital, because the most expensive setting for healthcare is an inpatient patient. And that's what we want to avoid. We want to avoid patients going into hospital and we want to get them out as soon as possible. So this technology, Dexcom is the leader here, it's called continuous glucose monitoring. And so you put this part of the product on your body and it has a tiny sensor which lasts for about 10 to 14 days. This is the applicator and it sends a signal to your phone or to your watch and show every 5 minutes your blood glucose. So you can see that range where your glucose should be, what it's doing, and if it goes out of range, you can deal with it before you end up in trouble. And this is, penetration is quite low. The company just reported its most recent quarter growing revenue at 50%. So it's a phenomenal growth story and it's been a great stock. And this is just to emphasize the cost side. So this splits out the costs of dealing with diabetic patients. 43% is hospital inpatient care. All the costs on the system, the major costs of the hospital setting. An example of what we're seeing with payers and medical device companies working together, UnitedHealth is the biggest insurer in the US. They've done a value-based focused deal with Medtronic that provides other types of medical devices. And this is all focused on managing patients and keeping costs lower. Polar Capital. Healthcare is pretty complicated. UK is not that wide an investment opportunity. So obviously you have Glaxo, Astra, Smith & Nephew, and you used to have Shire. And there's a smattering of small companies. But globally and in different markets, there's so many different subsectors. And we use this as justification for the opportunity in a specialist healthcare fund like our investment trust. And then this is the team of six of us based at Polar Capital. And these are the current different products we offer. And this is what we're focused on today, PCGH. So specifically with the investment trust, we think obviously healthcare is very cheap. The trust, because healthcare is out of favor and the yield is quite low on the trust, is sitting about a 9% discount, 10% discount. So I would argue you've got a 30% opportunity just on multiples or valuation to get to the historical average from the catalysts I've talked about a drug pricing bill and then potentially the outcome of the US election. And then you've got that 10% discount on top. So I think it offers a compelling opportunity. And just to finish with the basic structure of the investment trust. So I'll wrap up there and open up to any questions.
Could you address the rising flow of litigation in the United States, which is where a great deal of your portfolio unavoidably has to be exposed to?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So, I mean, we used to... So we tend to be tactically reasonably aggressive. So if we're concerned about the market backdrop, we'll change exposure. And a stock we used to like a lot of when we were nervous about the market was Johnson & Johnson. However, Johnson & Johnson is your poster child of what you're talking about. They are being, they're being sued over their talc product, risk of cancer. They have exposure to the opioid situation in the US, which I'm sure you're all aware of. And they also got an $8 billion judgment over one of their old schizophrenia drugs, which I think will be significantly reduced. It's the nature of the beast in the marketplace. We'll typically avoid companies that do have that exposure. It can be a left field event, but I think it's the nature of the US market and it's in the broadest sense. So it's a risk you have to deal with. I would like to own Johnson & Johnson. I would have liked to own it this year. Fundamentally, it's doing very, very well. But with these litigation overhangs, we stay away from the stock. So that's the only way we can deal with it.
Hi. Could you provide a bit more color on valuations in medtech? Two examples you provided, Intuitive Surgical and Stryker, are quite punchy multiples.
Yeah. So for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been heavily involved in the medical device sector. Fundamentally, they've been doing fantastically well. They've outperformed over that period. Typically, for a growth sector, you don't really get outperformance further than 4 years. The market figures out that they're doing well fundamentally. So multiples on medical device stocks are high. We've reduced our exposure as a reflection of that. I would say, however, so we're at the cheaper end of the spectrum. We're really focused on pharma biotech right now. That's where we've been increasing our weighting, largely built around these catalysts for the revaluation of healthcare upwards. So we've got more of a value slant right now. But I would also argue those stocks have been expensive for a long, long time. Valuation isn't the key driver of stock returns. The 75% of stock returns come from relative earnings revisions, and that's what our fundamental work focuses on. So valuation is part of it, but it's not a major driver in delivering relative performance if you look at the analytics. So they're expensive, we've reduced, but bear that in mind if they offer opportunity. Intuitive Surgical is always going to be expensive. It's never been cheap. And if you haven't invested in it, you've missed out on huge returns.
So I was just curious about when looking at companies to invest in, how do you take into account their spread of current R&D? Like, so for example, if it's a heavy focus on oncology, there's quite an inherent risk there that it's going to be a failure and not going to perform compared to current drugs. So my question is like, do they have to have a focus on multiple areas of R&D, or do you prefer companies which, say, for example, in oncology are not 100% backing their oncology R&D currently?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, if you invest in pharma and biotech, that's your biggest risk. You're investing in R&D. So we take a pragmatic kind of approach to it. So the way we typically invest, and let's just say a smaller biotech company just to make it cleaner, because pharma companies are more diversified, right? So if they have a failure, they still have a business. So what we typically do is we try to invest early, but we don't go very early. We want to see initial clinical data. We invest over time in the company. We hope the market puts more valuation on the story. We tend to come out of the stock before binary events, which is what you're really alluding to. In biotech land, you can lose a lot of money if it goes against you. And then what we've really found as sort of the best opportunity is if you can appreciate the story and understand if the result is positive and what that result is and what it means, you can often buy the stock afterwards and still generate significant returns. And that's where I've often found in biotech we've done really well. And binary events have been mixed for us. We tend to avoid them. It's difficult. You can do as much due diligence as you want and you get and you still get it wrong. So we try and avoid the situation, but not trade, invest around the events. And often when, if you have a biotech company and the results are negative, that can provide an opportunity because you can have a huge overreaction to the downside.
Do you always invest only in listed companies?
Yeah, we don't do private in this vehicle. We don't have the expertise in-house, so we wouldn't go there.
Do you, I'm curious to know if you have any interest in Asian pharmaceutical or biotechnology companies and what your reasons for your view are.
Yeah, so China specifically. So China's very focused, the government there, in building its own biotech industry. So there are a number of companies listed. This year they've done well. We're not buying them now. We think they're pretty overvalued. Naturally, there are pressure points next year, but we're always looking for opportunity there. So what you've seen is sort of scientists that have worked for companies in the US. They've then gone to China, and you've got this sort of building industry there. So I think it's really exciting long term. And also the penetration and use of pharmaceuticals in China is very low. So there's huge growth there. The only issue you need is recognition of intellectual property. Is a challenge, although that's supposed to be improving, and there's enormous competition. So in the US, I think there's four of those PD-1 inhibitors that are in immuno-oncology, Merck, Astra, Roche, I forget the other one. If you include all the ones being developed in China, I think there's about 45 to 50. So, you know, it's very challenging when you have that much competition on pricing, and the business model, if you're a product company with heavy R&D, is you need improving gross margins to generate any operating leverage. So competition is quite challenging. But, you know, longer term, it's a really, really big opportunity. Right now, we don't see it as an opportunity, but that's a shorter term call. And then Indian pharmaceuticals are more being around the generics industry. That's a really tough industry right now. The stocks were amazing for years. They're not, fundamentally, it's very, very challenged. And so we avoid that market. And if you want a poster child for that, even though it's not an Indian company, look at Teva. That share price was at $70. I think it bottomed at around 7 or 8 and it's bounced a bit. But, you know, that's a very, very sad story in terms of what was an amazing company and what's happened to that. And the generics marketplace is so competitive and so difficult to generate growth. Thanks very much. I hope that was helpful. And I think, you know, just to repeat, I think healthcare is very, very attractively valued here. So thanks very much.
PIWORLD videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PIWORLD is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.